Good evening. So we have a couple of new faces tonight. Have you been here before? No. Let's introduce ourselves around.
I'm Britt.
I'm Greg.
I'm Randy.
I'm Julie.
I'm Forrest.
Samuel.
Melissa.
Julie.
Wendy.
Donalyn.
Ron.
Angie. How did you hear about us?
I found you guys on the internet.
Happens every time. You too?
No, it's your favorite event.
I see. Well, welcome. We're just starting on a new study. I've been thinking about it all week. It's been so interesting. It's such a huge subject in a way, and yet we take it totally for granted. It's the subject of time. We save time, and we don't have enough time, and we live our whole lives in a kind of frantic relationship with time. And yet, nobody really knows what it is. You'd be amazed. Science News just had an article about time because somebody has a new theory about it that includes a theory of the origin of this universe. Not a small thing. That has to do with time. And as part of the introduction to Dogen Zenji's Uji, which means being time, or time being, meaning that it's not a line going from here to there. That time is the being of our life. In each moment. This time is the time. It's a vertical thing rather than a horizontal one. The scientists talk about the timeline or the arrow of time. But they have discovered, actually, that in our realm, this big hunky material realm that we walk around in, time goes in one direction, and it's the direction of falling apart. Entropy, they call it. So it starts out as a discrete whole and then begins to fall apart. And of course you see that in everything from the leaves on the trees to your own body. As you get older, you fall apart and finally, whoop, it's over. They say that we're heading toward complete entropy and nobody knows what happens at the end of the universe. But I will read you what Sean Carroll has cooked up. He said, in the laws of physics, equations describing the forces that guide matter in motion work equally well forward and backward on the molecular scale. And no one can explain this. In our ordinary life, time goes one way, the arrow of time, and seems irreversible. From the Big Bang forward, universal changes seem to move all matter toward dissolution. But there is the possibility that the universe the Big Bang created is just one among a multitude of distinct space-time bubbles coating the surface of eternity like the froth on a mug of beer. Is that cool or what? I just think it's so wonderful. And he goes on to say, we don't know what happened before the Big Bang, but it's absolutely possible that something did. So suddenly, instead of being enclosed, it opens up. As our minds open up, I do believe, to possibility. Woody Allen said, "Eternity is a very long time, especially toward the end." The word that's most interesting for us is the word change. And it's why this becomes such an interesting subject. Because change is the one thing that mostly we don't like. Or if we like it, we like it too much. We hold on to things too hard, and we try to get rid of things so much that we, in Buddhist terms, create tremendous suffering for ourselves and for others. And it's our sense that things shouldn't change. They should stay in some kind of more perfect way. And if we work real hard, that we can somehow keep things the way they used to be. And we often have deep regret when things change and they're not the way they used to be anymore. We feel loss. But that loss doesn't come from the situation itself. It comes because we're not in the situation that we're in. We're still back there somewhere in our mind. It's just an idea that we have. And we're so fond of our ideas because they make us feel a little more stable and secure. There was one article on the internet about this subject in terms of organizations, business organizations, and how it's very hard to run an organization because everyone wants it to be the same and not to change. And at the same time, it's changing all the time. And so there's this tremendous resistance and a lot of pain that goes along with it because it doesn't flow the way the actuality of it flows. There's just this, it's got to be the way it was last year because we've always done it this way. I hear that at Chikoji all the time. You know, they look back at the way they used to do things at Chikoji, and I can look back 20 years and think, well, they didn't do it 20 years ago that way. It just keeps rolling along. But we often don't roll with it. And Buddha's insight was that we don't need to live that way. We can acknowledge and accept that our life and all life around us is totally impermanent. We can't stick it down and make it stay, much as we would love to. But once we accept that, suddenly a whole thing opens up for us, for our mind. It's just this clinging that we have. It's just a mind cramp, a brain cramp. We don't have to do it. And sitting zazen is a wonderful way of discovering this and practicing it and exercising it. Because when we sit still this way, not going anywhere, not doing anything, thinking a mile a minute, but not thinking of anything that makes any difference because we're only here, then we begin to see how the mind is working. And begin to feel how the body is working. And to become more and more the body of us. As the body of the life around us. We're all breathing together. This house is breathing. The trees are breathing. It's all alive. So in Buddhism, there were a lot of theories about time, but it wasn't taken terribly seriously except the one about the three stages of the Dharma. The Buddha's life and teaching was the first stage, and then there was the second stage when it wasn't so good anymore, and then the last stage was the sort of another description of entropy, when it all just falls apart and it's no good anymore. And so off and on through these last more than 2,000 years, when life got really hard for Buddhists, they would say, oh, it's the bad time now, it's over. And so in Dogen's time, Dogen grew up in a very, very difficult time. There were wars, there was starvation, there was tremendous anxiety and huge change. And it's often in times of big changes when people don't feel safe anymore and they can't keep up with the way things are. It's kind of like where we are now in a way. So many things are going on that you begin to feel like there's nothing to hold on to. And so it was a very enthusiastic Buddhist practice of talking about the third time, the bad time. It's over. And Dogen looked at that and said, no, it's not. That isn't the way, that isn't what Buddha meant. He said impermanence. He didn't put a value judgment on how things were. It was much closer to the bone than that. It was part of the blood and breath of life, not an idea. So one great scholar said, Dogen was not concerned with how and why all existence was as it was. He didn't analyze it, but simply with the fact that all existence existed in thusness. He found Buddha nature in this fact. In the true life of it, the true life of us is Buddha nature itself. It's not out there somewhere. Kodo Sawaki said, the Zen master, the Zen of Master Dogen, is not the wish to become more than human, a special being, Buddha, or God. It is to return to the normal condition of the human mind. The normal condition of the human mind. Now that's a koan. What is the normal mind? We say that in the Meal Sutra, don't we? I've forgotten how it goes. The natural order of mind. What is the natural order of mind?
As we desire the natural order of mind, we must be free.
Exactly. As we desire the natural order of mind to be free from clinging, we must be free from greed. So we live our lives clinging to our identity, to our ideas about how things should be, how everything around us should be. even as those things are becoming obsolete. The ultimate truth, the reality of things, if you want to talk about what truth is or Dharma is just this. everlasting moment of us being time or existent time or time present. Carl Bielefeld said, "The ultimate truth happening around us is the welling up and enlightenment in the world." So, I brought you the chapter. And it is this book that it is from, called Enlightenment Unfolds. It came out of San Francisco Zen Center, and it's Kaz Ta-Nehisi who did the editing, and most of the teachers from San Francisco Zen Center did the translation with him. And it's a very good one. There are a number of others, and you can look them all up on the internet, or you can look in the bookstores. There's lots and lots of this material, and lots of ways that people have cast Dogen's words. You will find that it's not linear at all, the writing. It's just like his whole message about time. It doesn't go from point A to point B exactly. I've numbered the paragraphs or the sections. Most of the others are just run all together, so it's very hard to separate it out. But I think this way we can address each number each evening. And there are 10 of them. So what I'd suggest for the first week until we meet again is to read this, enjoy it. Taigen Layton says you can't read this trying to figure it out, but let it wash over you like a symphony. Just let it be music, and you'll see it will. It will sound like music. Are there questions? Thousands of questions. Like light?
Like light. And so it can speed up or slow down. I'm not a physicist.
But that's the human experience. It does speed up or slow down, depending on what we're doing.
Yeah.
And when you're a kid having to take a nap, it goes on forever, right? Yeah. We all have a relationship with time. And we all, especially around change, but also about speed. I think especially our culture is so based on trying to cram as many things into as short a time as possible, that it creates a tremendous sense of anxiety because we can't quite do what we're trying to do. It's really not quite humanly possible, and yet we feel obliged to do it, to cram it all in. Every now and then someone will get sick or just throw in the towel and then say later, you know, that was so nice. I didn't have to do anything for a while. It felt so good. So I think we have a somewhat conscious and somewhat unconscious relationship with time, that it will be helpful to cultivate a little bit more, get to know better how we actually are with it, what it means to us. I struggle with it myself because one part of my life is the joy of writing. And I often don't give myself the time to do it. And I'm always so sorry about that. At the same time, it's sort of a struggle between what I should be doing and what I really feel I need to do. I think many people have that same struggle. What are we really? What's the best that we can do? Not what we should do, but what we really need to do.
We subjectively experience time depending on our moods, or whether we're awake or dreaming or sleeping or daydreaming, busy or really worked up about something. Can we slow it down to the extent that it becomes just this eternal present moment, and we really have a lot more of it than we thought?
Infinite.
I've read a lot of, you know, different things. So there could be a meditation where they say somebody who really has some advanced powers could look at the clock, the hand of the clock, and just kind of slow it down until it stops, or almost stops. Or at least move so slowly that you wouldn't notice the difference.
And that just happens to all of us.
It's just all 20 minutes. Yeah. It's all it's all subjective. I guess that's the point I'm trying to get around about. It's pretty subjective. I'm on vacation overall. I was on vacation last week and traveling. Went to a few different town halls, you know, and would keep changing my watch, my cell phone reset itself, change my watch. It was very kind of disorienting in a way, but it was also kind of nice in a way. Oh, well, I just gained 3 hours. Oh, I lost them again when I came back. It's all just our own minds, you know. So maybe we probably worry about it too much. Especially here where we have deadlines.
Yeah.
Pressures. Gosh. Gotta get this done. That never gets done.
There's always more.
When we're supposed to.
Yeah.
But it's serviced by the website.
Julia?
You mentioned, like, you know, what you want to be doing, or what you, you're responsible.
Mm-hmm.
Is there, I'm not sure if there's really an escape from that kind of feeling. I mean, it just, even when you think you've escaped it, I don't know, I mean.
You mean the tension?
Yeah.
Yeah, there is tension in it.
Tension, but there's no way to figure yourself out of it, and you just kind of just... Tension isn't so bad in the way.
No, it's what gets us.
If we look at ourselves, it's hard enough to create another...
Well, this isn't talking about a new idea. This is talking about what Dogen called taking a backward step of just being where we are when we're there, not someplace else. So if we put ourselves in the future or the past, then we're already in a dream world. So if we operate from the present moment, then our relationship to past and future are completely different. And it means that we can enact our life with wisdom because we're actually there, here.
Sometimes I feel like I'm not quite fitting into my life.
Yeah, and that's part of it, you know, that's what it is right now. Yeah. Sometimes easy, sometimes hard, sometimes fast, sometimes slow. It's only when we look back that we can say, look at that. You know, that happened and that happened. We never know, really, what's happening next. We offer ourselves to it from where we are.
And should we operate that way, there's no sense of regret?
Yes. Yes. No sense of regret.
Oh, I should have...
Yeah.
I don't know. I could have been a contender, you know.
Could have won. Alas, alas. Yes, good.
Past events are no predictor of future outcomes, in a sense.
Yes. Yep. Randy?
I've heard it described as the eternal now. Sometimes when I meditate, I become aware of my heartbeat, just this beat. My life is this beat, or this breath. But this head, no, it's already, I got to get up in the morning, I got to go to the union hall. I'm psychic too, because I know what's going to happen.
Right?
Like I'm going to plan that car accident tomorrow, right?
Yes.
So I'm living in this fairy tale that's not real. And I call that my life. And I'm caught up in the story and time. You know, and sometimes I think my head is so smart. It's so not. You know, it's like every cell in our body has like this vast DNA, all this incredible wisdom of the universe.
Yeah.
But this thing, you know, is convinced it's got its plan. You know? And its plan is time. It's in time. You know, I live in time. I don't live in, and it turns out to be an abstract thing. Like, I think I'm going to find my happiness. just over there, and I just,
yes.
I just get there. And no one noticed you got that eternal carrot? Oh, yeah. When I get there, it's going to be good. When I get there, it's going to be good. And that's time. That's living in time.
It's yes.
Living in a mind, mental projected future that's not, has no reality, no reality, no basis in reality.
Well, I remember when you gave me Eckhart Tolle's CD long ago, and he's brilliant in describing this. He doesn't go all the way in the way that Dogen does, I think. He stops before he gets there. But that's his whole message, and it's in wonderful English that anybody can understand. So you might want to read Eckhart Tolle in conjunction with this, just because it tells a lot about this subject, about us and how we manufacture our dreams, and also how we don't have to. He's very perspicacious in his own way. Samia?
Jumping ahead here, is there a simple way to teach a child about this? Couldn't be the child, but like if we were to reduce it, and I really want the new iPhone, it's going to be so great, Mom, you know.
Well, that was Buddha's message about satisfaction. As long as we're not satisfied and want more and more, we'll always be unhappy and wanting more.
Right,
so
we've discussed that, but it's not the thing, is it?
It's like,
I think we have.
Yeah, we have. We have. It is the way of the world. But if she understands that her wants, that some are needs and some are wants, and that maybe she can, if she has a real want that isn't a need like an iPhone, then she can get a job and earn enough money to buy it for herself. And you provide her needs because you're the mom. And then she could understand a little bit about it.
I'm actually reminded of a story that I read that was I have no idea what portion of Japanese history this comes from, but a businessman went to go see a monk to ask him to teach the way, and the monk brings tea out for the businessman, and he says, and the businessman starts talking about what he knows about the way and what he understands about the way, and the monk takes the teapot and pours tea. As the businessman keeps talking, the monk keeps pouring the tea until the tea is overflowing onto the table and onto the ground. The businessman finally says, "What are you doing?" And the monk says, "Well, you have all these wants and you have all these needs. They overflow your cup. You need to find a way to empty your cup."
It's a great story. Yes.
What are your thoughts on goals and their relationship and impact on time and ability to appreciate time?
Well, goals, in Zen we say we have no goal. Especially in sitting, it's very helpful instruction because it's so easy to sit down and think we're going to achieve something. Or we're doing it for some big reason. And actually, we're just being present and learning how to be present as we sit. And so that in itself is a kind of way of being with the desire for achievement and goals. It's not that we don't have intention. In fact, I think one of the basic things that we do in Zen is to create authentic intention in our life. And then whatever happens, we're operating from there, from our heart, the intention in our heart and our belly, you could say. And then if it doesn't, if it goes awry, if it messes up, or we mess up, which we always do, it isn't so crucial because we do the best we can with our best intention. But the more conscious we are of it, and the more that we're able to renew and change and flow with the intention as our life changes and flows with us, as us, the less troubled we are by the way things turn out. Setting too big a goal always sets us up for a fall, almost always, because it's so hard to achieve very, very high goals and standards. Really, the Buddha's instruction was to do no harm. And then do your very best at whatever you really want to do and feel compelled to do and inspired to do and what feels like the best way. Buddha said, proceed as way opens. So it's not like some great big picture that we have and we know where we're going. We just, it's step by step by step. And that's a relief. I mean, it's a whole lot easier that way.
Say that again. Proceed.
Proceed as way opens.
Words to live by.
Yes. Yes. Slowly, slowly, too. It's 8 o'clock.